This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
These are great experiences, period. And they're fun experiences. They're different. They do resemble the playoffs. You're not going to get, the kind of pregame especially resembled the playoffs, I thought. And so that's a good experience for our young players. Hopefully we get that experience again in October.
That's Craig Counsell talking about the Cubs' trip to Japan. And I'll tell you, it was really fun to have baseball that early. Really fun to have people driving into work and listening to ball games. At my house, on day one of that series, I tried to make the living room like the ballpark. I took out every piece of Cubs paraphernalia that my meatball wife owns and put it all out like on the coffee table or around the TV. Talking about all the bobbleheads, all the hats. There was a blanket. There were drinking glasses. There was a coffee mug. I mean, there was everything. I served popcorn. She was, she was tired. She wasn't that impressed. Day two, we stayed in bed, and that was a little more fun to watch the ball game and stay in bed. Some people had to go to the studio and do pregame and postgame. I wonder what call times were. Let's ask Elise Menaker, who from the Marquee Sports Network, who joins us right now, or joins me right now, I should say, on Hit and Run. It is me, Matt Spiegel, here with you for another hour on 670 The Score. Elise joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Elise, good morning. Thank you for the time. How are you?
Hi, Matt. I want to know more about eating popcorn at 5 in the morning. How did that go? I mean, I can eat some weird stuff in the morning. I'm not like a typical, I have to eat breakfast food for breakfast, but that's impressive.
Well, it was mostly just decorative for a while.
Oh, okay.
I will say... I mean, and my wife, she left the ball game in the middle to go to her morning Pilates class, which I thought was just rude, you know? I mean, seriously. And so I ate her popcorn. That was what I did. I ate her popcorn at that point. So it was about 6:30. Does that change your thoughts on my popcorn habits or no?
Yeah, that's, I can get on board with like more like a 6:30. Like, yeah, I don't know why I feel differently at 6:30 versus 5 a.m., but I get you've been up for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting around watching the game. Yeah, it's got a different vibe to it.
All right, thank you. Was it those games I saw you doing pre and post for in the Marquee Studio?
We just did post. Yeah, just post because otherwise we would have been on at 4 in the morning. So
yeah, of course, of
thank
course.
Thank you to our bosses for not doing that. So we just went on after the game, yeah.
All right, but like, could you get used to that? Could you get used to bagels or an egg sandwich in the fourth inning and like, you know, orange juice and baseball? Not so bad, I thought.
Do you know I didn't hate it? I mean, I would be exhausted over time, but having the whole day like that, it was different. I used to anchor morning news, and I was up at 2:53 every morning. I'm not going to lie, it's rough.
Yeah.
But for sake of, like, having a life, and even that can be difficult because, you know, you're falling asleep every night at, like, 6, 7. But it was a good change and a welcome change because I think it rose the excitement factor just because they were in Japan. We were hearing from Craig Council, like how he was talking about all the festivities around the games. It was all really cool and fun to wake up to knowing that you were going to watch some pretty historic games.
You know, you as a former player, Elise, can speak to it. I wonder, and for those who don't know, she's in the Cornell Hall of Fame as a badass third baseman and hitter. I think the word was kizuna, which is the Japanese word for bonding. And like all that stuff that goes on, it can have a negative effect. Can it have a positive effect? Everything that they were able to do together over there and to have this experience, even though the games were losses, spending all that time together and getting this early start on the competitive juices.
Yeah, I'm a believer in that stuff. I think in the modern game, chemistry really isn't like measured and doesn't factor in much because it's just believed if you have good players, you know, like you'll win basically. Like, but I always think it's an X factor for a championship team. I think anytime you talk to a player who has been on a championship team, we'll talk about how close that team was, just like players they had on it and personalities. And not just always, I mean, talent does win. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, I think a trip like Japan, it can bring a team together. It makes you closer. I do. Yeah, it's all positive, I think. Because what a unique experience. You can feel very isolated when you go abroad. I played softball in Sweden. And so even just getting off the plane where no one speaks the language, signs are in a different language. It's very overwhelming. And so to have each other in that situation to like be unfamiliar with food, to go in a store and have no idea what's on the shelves and what you could be buying, that's fun to have someone to share all of that with. And those are memories that will last, at the very least, they are memories that will last a lifetime. And so I think, what does that do on the ball field? I just think when you like have that common bond and you start coming together, it's like you're saying, it's all positive. So I love stuff like that, and I think it benefits the team.
You know, I agree. I'm interested in the Swedish softball. Was that a travel team? Was it a U.S. team? Was it a college trip? What was that, Elise?
I played professional softball in Sweden. So 2 days after I graduated from Cornell, completed my softball career by playing pro abroad. It's not something that, I mean, there are girls who go abroad. It's not highly talked about, the process that is. And because there's, you know, at the time I looked at playing pro in the States, but there weren't many teams. And one of the benefits of going abroad is you get the abroad experience.
Yep.
So I had a teammate who was looking at playing in Italy. She was older than me, but she didn't end up playing. So she kind of introduced me to the process and how she went into looking at and even getting involved. So from there is how I got attached to applying essentially for playing for teams abroad. And I connected myself to a team in Sweden. And typically it's pitchers and catchers. You've heard it with other sports. They get two foreigners on every team. So I'm considered a foreigner and usually it's pitchers and catchers. But with my hitting ability and the openings that my team saw that, you know, I thought it was a good fit. I had a great, great time. I still, you know, like just recently, even I traveled with a girl from my team. She's Swedish, now lives in Scotland. I've seen her the last couple of years because we'll travel together. Like I developed lifelong friends and like just to be able to complete my softball career in that way, because it was nice. I remember we were playing in the NCAA tournament, and I wasn't ready to stop. Like, I would have been really sad if I was never playing softball ever again. So just to kind of like almost ease out of the game versus like stop and know that these games, once you lose, you're done, never again. Like, that would have been really hard. So I'm glad I got the opportunity to take it to another level and then kind of be ready to leave it behind.
Elise Menneker is with us here from the Marquee Sports Network with me, Matt Spiegel, on Hit and Run. I'm going to do the listeners the favor by not bringing up the three-game sweep that we were broadcast partners for against the Cardinals when the Cubs won that.
Matt, we always have to bring it up. Like,
no,
how can we not?
I'm not going to do it this time. I'm not going to do it this time. I care too much about the listeners. I'm not.
I mean,
Even though they went off on an 8-game win streak that convinced Jed Hoyer to buy at the trade deadline, and I'm not going to even talk about the September swoon that got David Ross fired. I'm not going to bring up any of that stuff this time around, okay? So that's my choice.
No, definitely not. No, right. No, yeah. Definitely not. Okay. It's not like we think we were the reason they went on the win streak. Like,
nope.
Players are one thing, we're another. Okay, everyone?
Right.
Like,
exactly.
We
yes.
did that. So, yep. Yeah,
all
you're
right.
welcome.
Just need them to know that we're not going to do that this time because we care
right,
too much about
not.
Them.
No.
Yeah, obviously. Elise, tell me about Matt Shaw's leg kick and the fact that he turns his back away from the pitcher like that. For starters, I know he straightens out as the pitch is coming, but you know, maybe it's just that enough people are afraid of it and they're in my ear and the results were bad in the first two games that it's making me wonder if it can work on the big league level. You as a hitter and an analyst, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'm curious to see how it will evolve. I would not be surprised if it does evolve, just because I think when you get to the big league level with the pitching being what it is, the timing aspect is so important. And I feel like the leg kick can slow you down, or just because it has to be so in sync with the leg kick. I don't also think like he has to get rid of it. Like, that's why I want to see how it evolves, because I think we could see it change. But I also am not panicking about Matt Shaw. He has made adjustments throughout his career. It is not, it's not a coincidence that he's essentially never failed to this point, not to the extent that he probably will experience at the big league level, because anyone coming up at some point, they will have extended amount of failure more than they have had in the past. And think about it, Matt Shaw, the way he zipped through the minors and how he played in college. I mean, this is someone who more often than not was having success. When you win, you know, have accolades and just you are in a position he's in now, at the point he's in now, it means that you've done very well. And so I think because he is really smart and understands the game, I think he'll figure it out. And so I'll be curious to see. He's already tweaked his swing from last year. And so I'll be curious now, as he's getting feedback, what does he feel he needs to do at the plate that's going to make him the best and put up the results that we've seen him put up throughout the minors? I think he's a really good athlete. I think overall he'll be fine, but I do expect to see the ups and the downs with him. So yeah, I don't necessarily think when you see a leg kick, it has to be like, no, never, get rid of it. Like, let's see what makes him most comfortable and can have the results most consistently. And that's how I think we'll see him, what that stance evolves or looks like in a month, 2 years, I don't know. But yeah, I think it could change, but that's what I want to see, you know, what happens, because I don't think it's right to just jump like and panic and say, oh, these at bats didn't look great. We need to change everything. Overhaul. Like, he's been good, so let's see how can we make him good now in the big leagues.
Who do you think is capable of a step forward offensively from what they gave us last year on this team? Because it feels like there's a lot of candidates for that, which is kind of fun, whether it's people who had, you know, only played a little and are going to play a lot more, or veterans who might be in a better spot physically or mentally. Who's going to step it up offensively?
I think who stuck out to me in the first two games was Dansby Swanson. We know now that he was dealing with some stuff last season. And so I think already just his at bats, his power looks better. And so I think he could take a step forward. And I think for this team, to have the results that they expect and want to have, he'll be a key part of that. And so I'm excited to see what he does this season because we didn't know. I was funny because last year watching him, like at times I just felt something may have been off and I couldn't put my finger on it. And so hearing that in the offseason, I was like, oh, okay. Like he was dealing with something. And so now having that behind him with the core surgery and he can move forward and it seems like he's fine, right? I mean, defensively is never a question with him. It's honestly unbelievable. So now I think that will be a key piece. But I agree with you. Like, I think because you could kind of go down the list, right? I think Michael Bush even could take a step forward after a solid rookie year. Nico Horner, you want in there, but you want him healthy. So we'll see how long it takes for him to get back. You're going to have ups and downs with Matt Shaw. I think PCA could take a step forward. I think Amaya could take a step forward. That's kind of the fun part of younger players. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Happ has been pretty steady. Saya, how will he adjust to the DH role? He in the small sample size, he's actually been pretty good. But now we'll see, you know, just more as he's there every day. And then Kyle Tucker adjusting to the schedule, new team, everything. But overall, has always been really consistent. So I'm just kind of like running through the names. But that was the first one yep. that stuck out to me, especially based on the two games.
I love that answer because I agree with you. but on Dansby...
I love when we agree with each other.
I mean, it's but I was like, it literally,
I
pumped my fist when you said it because he had the injury last year, but he also had the loss of his former hitting coach from Atlanta, Mike Brumley, who he was close with.
You're right,
like,
yeah.
You know, so he had a lot of stuff going on. But the other thing, the other factor that I've been thinking about, because I agree, he looked great in those first two games, like some solid balls pulled to the left side and a long deep fly ball to the wall and right. And you know, when he's going oppo, that like that feels good. I saw him and Justin Turner working together when I was out there for a couple days, Elise. And like, when you see a veteran like Dansby really listening to an older successful veteran like Turner, you know how players can listen to teammates in ways that sometimes it might not register from coaches, and Turner like wants to be that guy and could have a very good effect on Dansby and others, I'm thinking.
No, I love that. I think it's huge when players talk to each other and they definitely can help each other. And they see the game, like you're saying, just through each other's lens, like they're all going through the same thing at the same time. I talked to Nico Horner about that a lot. He loves doing that, talking to his teammates and just being in it with yeah. them and having the understanding of what everyone's going through. It just can help a lot. And I'm not going to lie, Matt, I wrote down what you just told me and I'm going to get a nugget on Good. What Dansby was talking to Turner about. So I will get back to you
Good.
And let's see what their conversation was and what resonated.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, because I told the story on the air. It's like the thing that really stuck out to me, like they had a one-on-one session. I think it was Turner's first day in uniform. In fact, I know it was. It
okay.
was his first day in uniform. And there they were at the ballpark with Dustin Kelly, just the three of them working together. And it was really, really cool to watch. So I'd love to hear whatever you have on that.
Yeah,
for sure.
I love that.
Elise Medeker, just for another minute or two here on Marquee. What else is jumping out at you as a possible point for aggression? I've been thinking about this, like how we know it's a win now year for Jed Hoyer, and I think it's a win now opportunity in this division. So I love that Ben Brown is possibly in the five hole of the rotation. Like, let's go. If there's things like that that they can be aggressive on, this feels like a year to do it.
Yeah, and I think actually you looking at the pitching is where my mind goes, because I think if this team is going to go where they want to go, a lot of it will be invested in how the pitching goes. And so I think that's kind of now it's building up that depth. We definitely saw it in spring training and what a difference having all those arms in there. And now it's just about going through the season and how the depth pays off, but also having your guys step up. You know, like Shota will be in year two. I'm confident in Shota. I really think he's impressive and learns very quickly. So I'm not too concerned right now about like how the league could adjust to him, because I feel like he's very good at adjusting fast. But, you know, you've got Steele, who we didn't see for the beginning of this year last year, which was so unfortunate. We were so looking forward to what he could do all year long. So now it's like having someone like him, or like you said, Brent Brown, healthy, because the two guys I just mentioned, health, you know, has been a factor. And so I think, yeah, to have a young arm like Ben Brown, see what he can do. And then you have more veteran guys like Array in there, Matt Boyd, what he can do, Tyone, of course. And so you just need them to all be solid, because you just, that's what it's going to take. I mean, you look at who they just played, the Dodgers, and they've got it all. And so you're going to just need to compete at the high level consistently. You've got to have all the pieces.
Elise Menneker does a great job on Marquee Sports Network, and someday she and I will call another three-game sweep for the Chicago Cubs.
Yes!
You know, maybe when Ron Coomer gets into the Hall of Fame, you know, we'll figure it out. One of those
That'll
times.
Happen. Yes, yeah. That'll happen. So I'm in. Well, we're penciling our names in right now. So
there,
congratulations, Coom, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Elise. Appreciate you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
You got it. It's Elise Menneker from the Marquee Sports Network. All right. It's time to look at some old friends and where they are and what they're doing. Some former Cubs and Sox all around the league and what their roles are, I find interesting. Let's discuss. I'll bring it to you. Also, phone lines are back open for the rest of the show. We're here until noon on Hit and Run. Anything you want to discuss about the Cubs conversation that just took place, White Sox stuff that's been percolating all show long, and if you've got an over-under as well, you can text it in. I'm curious, what team's wins and or losses, what team's win total looks like an absolute no-brainer bet for you? I've got to help out my friend the bad gambler with a couple this week, so I'm crowdsourcing for info. 312-644-6767 is the number. It's Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run right here on the
screen. Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism, so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Survivor 48 is here, and after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
In the past, fouls that one down the right field line. Long run over there. I take it back. That sneaks out. It's gone. The wind brought it back. A two-run shot for Cam Smith.
Well, you can see what the Houston Astros are excited about with a guy like this. He's got some dynamic tools.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Look, we're going to talk about former Cubs and Sox around the majors as we get ready for opening day this week. But that guy has not yet played for the Cubs, and he will not. He's on the Houston Astros now. He might make the opening day roster. Cam Smith is the former number one pick, traded as part of the package to get Kyle Tucker. And Cam Smith just turned 22 last month. He has had all of 134 plate appearances as a professional baseball player. But the way that the Astros are talking about him, the way that the scouts around baseball are talking about him, is really jaw-dropping. I mean, this is a guy who his teammates and his coaches are over the moon about. Omar Lopez, the bench coach for the Astros, quote, "Obviously, he's older than Carlos Correa, but I had Carlos when he was 19 years old. It's the same way Cam Smith goes about his business." Mauricio Dubon, the former Giant, the utility player for the Astros, quote, "He's the best player in this spring training camp that we've got right now. He's the best performer. At 6 a.m., 6:30, he's in the cages working. It's only been 5 weeks, but what I've seen in 5 weeks, everyone likes him. It's been a great spring training." Jeremy Pena, the shortstop, says, quote, "He looks like a big leaguer to me. He's the guy that if he stays healthy and keeps doing what he's doing, he'll play in the big leagues for a really, really long time." All right, and then there's this one. You ready for this one? This is the one that'll really get you, Cub fans. From Mauricio Dubon, quote, You can quote me on this. Unquote. I am, for the record, I am quoting you on this. This is from Maurizio Dubon about Cam Smith. Quote, when he figures it out, when he has an idea of what they're going to do to him in the big leagues, I think he's going to be the next 60-homer guy. He'll put in the work, and he's got that much pop. Maurizio Dubon just said he's going to be a 60-homer guy in the big leagues. They're losing their freaking minds over Cam Smith. He's got 13 hits in spring training, five of them for extra bases, homered in his first two official at-bats in the Grapefruit League, and both of them came against big leaguers, Tylor Megill, who just made the Mets rotation, and A.J. Minter. First baseman Christian Walker, the former D-back, quote, I like that I don't see him over swinging a lot. It looks like he trusts that. He knows he just has to put the bat on the ball. When I see plate discipline, it's watching a guy who feels like he knows who he is at the plate. It's Christian Walker. This is all from The Athletic. Chandler Rome talking about Cam Smith, who's not going to be the opening day right fielder out there. He's also not going to be the opening day left fielder because that's Jose Altuve, who is misplaying ball after ball after ball. Our executive producer, Ryan Porth, sends me every highlight of Jose Altuve misplaying a ball in left field. I don't know what his personal obsession is, but I find it delightful. Absolutely delightful. Maybe it's just like the colossal bad treatment of a franchise icon. That's what's impactful to me. It's like, hey, man, you're one of the greatest players this team has ever had. An absolute hero. Surefire Astros Hall of Famer. Go play a position you never have. You suck at it, but we don't care. Go wear it out there. You know? But anyway, Cam Smith. If Cam Smith is great, like, now, when Kyle Tucker's here for perhaps just 1 year and not getting signed, and Cam Smith has another 6 years of salary control after this? Folks, that's what you call the nightmare scenario. The absolute nightmare scenario. Texter says, I didn't like his inclusion in the trade when it happened. Yeah, I'm with you. That was a lot. That felt like a lot. I had no problem with Isaac Paredes or any of the other pieces. But Cam Smith, you're like, oh boy. But, you know, they got a lot. They got a lot of guys like that. Could have given him Shaw instead and gone out and got a third baseman, gone out and gotten Bregman or gotten somebody else. But instead, they gave him Cam Smith. And I'll tell you this much, as we look around the league at some other pieces, we'll stay in Houston. Hayden Wesneski is going to be the fifth starter in that rotation. So they're going to have Wesneski, Paredes at third, and Cam Smith possibly on the roster. All from the Kyle Tucker trade. So three pieces. Oh, boy. Looking around at some other old friends around the league. Platooning out west for the Padres to play left field and possibly hit eighth on opening day is Jason Hayward. Still going, man.
He's still in there? Oh,
Jason Hayward, he wants to play. He's made all the money. He's pocketed all the money. We are officially now outside of the contract, aren't we? The Cubs are done paying, right? I think they still paid last year. Look up the details on the contract, would you? I think last
it's a lot
year was
for a really good speech.
Yeah, I think it was. Well, it really was a good speech. I think it was an 8-year deal from 2016. So that means either 23 or 24 was the last time, and Hayward wants to play. So he's still fighting and scratching and clawing. And he's going to play left field for the Padres out there. Tell you who else might get some left field at bats, maybe some first base at bats, and certainly some DH at bats for the Padres. That would be Gavin Sheets, ladies and gentlemen. Gavin Sheets has had a heroic spring for the San Diego Padres. 6 home runs, tied for the lead among all spring training batters with, among others, Trace Thompson of the Red Sox. Yeah, I don't know if Trace Thompson is going to make that team. The Red Sox have all those rookies they're looking for a spot for. So many young rookies on that Red Sox team. When did Hayward's deal expire? Did you find that, Robbie?
This is the last year his deferred deal. $5 million he will get this year from the Cubs. Guess how much he'll be making from the Padres this year.
A veteran's minimum, I will guess.
$1 million.
Yeah, $1 million.
So the Cubs are paying him a lot more than the Padres.
Yeah, that's right. So they still have Hayward's $5 million on the books deferred from the big trade or the big free agent signing. But yeah, Gavin Sheets and Jason Hayward will be Padres when you turn them on. The Angels roster has everything. I've said this. It's like a Stefan sketch on SNL. The Angels roster has everything. Yoan Moncada at third base. Perhaps Tim Anderson at second base. Both are going to make the team. Kyle Hendricks is the fourth starter. Jorge Soler is the designated hitter. I mean, it's all there, folks. It's all there. It's amazing. Good luck, Ron Washington. Did you know that playing first base and batting cleanup for the Marlins is Matt Mervis? Here you go, Matt. What do you got? Let's see what you can do. Should we call his dad? I've got Matt Mervis's father's phone number. Never forget, folks. You know, this is how dedicated I am to the craft. When Matt Mervis was making his debut, I saw Taylor McGregor with a microphone in the during the game, saw her at Wrigley talking to a guy who clearly was probably Matt Mervis's father. Like he looked like Matt Mervis. He was wearing a Mervis jersey, and Taylor McGregor was talking to him in the middle of the game. And I'm like, that's got to be Matt Mervis's father. So when she was done, I walked up and got the phone number, and we put him on whatever show I was hosting with whatever partner I had at the time. I don't remember, folks. It's been a long life. I think it was Danny Parkins. I think that's who it was. I can report, by the way, that Danny Parkins called me on my personal phone during Hit and Run to have a conversation. So he's living up to his past of not listening to this show. I really respect his continued efforts to stay grounded, to stay the same man he was before he hit the big time. He's going to continue not listening to Hit.
That's how we know fame hasn't changed him. He's that is truly amazing.
That's what I'm saying. He's not changing who he is. He's going to continue to be the same grounded guy who ignores this radio show. And then one other old friend. If there's more that I'm missing, you let me know. But Wilson Contreras is a full-time first baseman now for the St. Louis Cardinals. He's a full-time first baseman. And Ivan Herrera is a popular breakout pick in the National League because he's a good hitter and he's going to be the full-time catcher down there in St. Louis. But Wilson Contreras is the full-time first baseman replacing Paul Goldschmidt for the St. Louis Cardinals. So that's a little look at some of the old friends, where they are and what they're doing. Texter is suggesting don't give Matt Mervis's dad's phone number out on the radio. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Absolutely. I don't plan on doing that, but it's always good to try and cover my ass in that regard. We want you to hear from an incredibly important person on this White Sox organization and somebody in this rebuild. So we'll let you do that next when we come back on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Heavy swung for 15 in the postseason. Puts this one down the line. Hooking to the corner and gone. Lightning in a bottle from Bob Melvin. And it strikes right away. 4-1 game. Drury gets the Padres on the board.
Premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Hey, man, this is where you get those Brandon Drury highlights you've been dying for, the ones that you've just been waiting on all that time. Here's why you're hearing Brandon Drury homer for the Padres, was it? He homered for a lot of people. I remember when he exploded onto the scene as a Red, and I think he had already been in the big leagues for like three different teams over the course of like 5 years, but I was like, hey, who's this guy? But anyway, Brandon Drury bounces around a lot. He was going to make the White Sox. He was having a big spring, was Brandon Drury. A lot of home runs, looking good, doing what he usually does. 32 years old, had what, 3 homers, 11 ribbies in spring training. Then he broke his thumb, fractured his left thumb. They released him today. They also sent down Gus Varland, so he is no longer here. But Brandon Drury released. It's probably the bigger news of that. I mean, the biggest news for the White Sox this week is that Drew Thorpe is getting Tommy John surgery. So that means that the people getting Tommy John surgery who have been members of this White Sox spring training include Drew Thorpe, Kai Bush, Prelander Baroa, Juan Corella, and Blake Larson. And maybe this other guy, Mason Adams, he might be getting Tommy John too. That's a lot. That is a lot. This is what happens when you bank on arms. When you bank on a big pile of young arms, you're going to lose them. There will be attrition. It's just the nature of the beast. Brian Bannister is the new director of pitching for the White Sox, and he spoke to the media this week and gave an update on all things White Sox pitching. And this is a smart guy and somebody whose organizational viewpoint is an opportunity for you to have some hope. Here's Bannister this week talking about Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith, Grant Taylor, and more.
I think it's pretty obvious we had two aces in recent times, two of the top 10 starters in baseball, and I think we're seeing new exciting pitchers emerge. So I wouldn't call any guy an ace so far. I think it's actually the strength of the group. They're all working together. They all have talent and upside. They're collaborating. I think our pitching department as a whole is very exciting just with the flow of information, the upgrades we've made to analytics, Jerry and Chris moving our lab down here with much better information, much faster turnaround times. In the past, it was a lengthy turnaround time to get good information back. Now we can get it back same day or the next day. So we've been able to make very fast adjustments with this group, and I think you see them all taking strong strides forward.
Do you need a guy like Crochet or Cease at the top of your rotation, or is that something you just develop along the way?
I think of the group, some will obviously take more steps forward than others, and you want to get to the point where there is a de facto ace. It's nice to have that alpha at the front of the rotation, the guy when you start getting back into the playoffs is leading your team, where there's no doubt that he's pitching game one. You want to get to that point, but I think at this point we have a lot of candidates for that guy in the future, and we'll see who steps up, who stays healthy, and who goes out and puts up the best season.
You're talking about ease is developing, and obviously you have two pitching Saturday, Hagen and Noah have been very impressive this spring. What stood out to you about them that maybe we haven't noticed besides just their presence and what they've done out there?
I've probably been most impressed with just their calm demeanor. They're in big league camp. You know, it's challenging for anyone. You're facing better hitters. You put a lot of pressure on yourself to perform. But they're friends. They have different arsenals, even though they're both left-handed. So they're out there in different styles. But I think they've just walked around, not with an ego, but with kind of a presence that I belong here. I think that's what I've been most impressed with. They've done their work. They throw professional bullpens already. You know, Hagen's only been here a little while, and Noah's been here a little longer, but he's still young in age. But just the way they carry themselves, they know they're going to be big leaguers, and it's just exciting to watch them work.
They really do seem to play well off each other, too, and they've talked about that they have become friends in the short time knowing each other.
Yeah, you typically see them walking around with each other, and I'm a big fan of power lefties, and they've gone out and done their job, but I've been more impressed with the work they're putting behind the scenes and not getting too high and low emotionally. They really have this steady calmness to them that you see in some of the better players.
How close are Hagen and Schultz? And when you have two big prospects like that, there's a kind of a tendency for fans to say, you know, bring them up now.
It's going to be a special rotation in Birmingham. You have a lot of really talented arms. Even Wickelman Gonzalez threw a great game yesterday. Grant Taylor's had a great spring. So when you get all those guys in the mix, there's something special about having them play together and building that camaraderie, knowing how to build off of each other, seeing each other, even though their arsenals are different, go about their work, sharing ideas, bouncing ideas off each other. And ultimately, in today's game, you know, you see it kind of falling apart at the college level. At the high school level, it's all travel ball. I think there's an important element to keeping guys together and having this continuity. When they get up to the big league level, it's such a transient environment with so many players nowadays switching teams all the time. I think them playing together, them knowing each other, build something special, and that's what I'm looking forward to. And so I think when the time is right, they'll all get their opportunity. But for now, I'm really excited about them actually just getting to be together, knowing they have special qualities and they're going to be special players. And I think that will compound on each other.
It's really nice to have a dude who's been around the game as long as Brian Bannister has, with so many different organizations and different roles and done a lot of baseball work at a high level outside of MLB. So he's hip to the teachings at some of the factories, some of the learning centers that have kind of taken over. He really understands it from all different levels and facets. And he's in charge of it from the entire organizational perspective. I don't know if anybody was following or remembers, but Brian Bannister was on Twitter, I'd say, I don't know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, and would engage in incredibly awesome high-level pitching analysis conversations and answer questions and go on deep dives in threads, just kind of explaining the process and the thought process on all sorts of stuff. And it was really cool. It was just one of those guys who was, at the time, just not working for a big league organization, but kind of doing stuff, as I mentioned, outside of the game, and was just engaging in some big picture stuff, not afraid of giving out some wisdom, because it's really how you organize that information. The way that executives think about that stuff is really kind of enlightening sometimes. It's all about gathering every bit of information that you can and then choosing what to value. So really what separates you is your choices of what you're valuing and then how you put together action plans based on that. That's what separates, you know, the Theo Epsteins and the David Sterns and, you know, all these different guys, the Andrew Friedmans and, you know, the Dave Dombrowskis. It's like, it's a matter of having the money to spend on the best players, of course, and it's having like good scouts and everything like that. But these days with all the information, it's figuring out what to value. And that's what Brian Bannister is doing. That's what Brian Bannister is helping the White Sox figure out. So even if he's here for a year or two and he jumps, let's say he jumps like Craig Breslow jumped. Like, let's say he jumps to a team and runs a team. Like, Craig Breslow's now running the Red Sox. Maybe in his couple of years here, his few years here, Brian Bannister will have instilled some things in the org that it's needed desperately, have, you know, trained intentionally or just by happenstance a successor or two to stick around and carry out what he has instilled and gotten you in a healthy place. So It's really cool. And then like to see that Hagen and Schultz are going to be in Birmingham. And I know some people are like, well, that's not Charlotte. No, but the fact that it's even just Birmingham is quite a thing. I mean, Smith was just drafted, you know, Schultz the year before, but my goodness, like a lot of times these guys are in A, low A, high A for a while, like slowly making their way up. They obviously feel good about their teaching in Birmingham and feel good about some of their teaching in Charlotte. And we'll see if they eventually feel good about their teaching and their big league club in Chicago. This has been a lot of fun. Hit and Run is in and done for this final Sunday before the official opening day. The domestic opener all around the league, including in Chicago and in Arizona for the Cubs, is Thursday. Me and Lawrence Holmes will be back with you tomorrow. On Thursday and Friday, we'll be in Vegas for the opening days of baseball. Looking forward to that very much. Thanks so much to Robbie Triano, who did a great, great job as the Hit and Run producer, even though we failed on the blue pit. Do you have a new blue pit for me, by the way, Robbie?
I do have a new blue pit. Everybody, the debut, the third blue pit.
Slide whistle up and then trombone down. I don't know. It's still a work in progress.
Whatever.
But yeah, I like the efforts. You're constantly making adjustments. That's what makes you a big league producer. Thank you to Chuck Garfine, who was on the show. Jeremy Martyr from The Music Box. Head over to The Music Box and see Ephus, among other baseball movies. And thank you to Elise Menneker from Marquee. Have a wonderful day. Cubs baseball is coming up later at 2:55. Thanks for listening to Hit and Run right here on 670 The Score.